Alright, Parshas Vayera. So I want to do it is the Akedas Yitzchak, the binding of Isaac. For those I'm sure who are here, remember we did this 2 years ago. But what we did 2 years ago was we started from the beginning of the story and we went through the verses. We got 5-6 verses in. So what I'd like to do, as I'm sure you're all holding in all that still, you remember all that well. So we'll just pick up from where we left off and continue along the story. So without going into great details, the beginning of it, of course, it opens on page 100. Just a very brief summary of where we are up to, and then we'll start studying inside from there on out. The Torah begins, Vayiachar hadvarim ha'ele, was after these things. So we discussed at length then what exactly, where in chronology, where we're talking about, but Hashem decides to give a test to Avraham, according to Rashi and according to the Ramban, the final of his 10 tests, this very difficult test of binding his son Yitzchak. And he, Avraham, the Torah describes, takes his son Yitzchak and some of his young lads with him, and they head off to what we know to be where the site of the Beis Hamikdash would eventually be built to perform this this mitzvah. The point where I would like to start, we'll begin with verse 6. What happened on verses 4 and 5, we'll just read it through in English. On the third day, Avraham raised his eyes and perceived the place from afar. So they're traveling, Avraham with his son Yitzchak. He sees from afar the place where he's going to go. And Avraham says to his young men, stay here by yourselves with the donkey, while I and the lad will go yonder. We will worship and we will return to you. So Avraham leaves everybody behind. He and his son Yitzchak go on their own proceeding. That's where we got up to. Previously, we'll pick up the story here. We're pretty much familiar with the story. I feel like it's safe to do so. So let's start there. So Pasuk Vav, beginning on page 102, we're in the middle of the story of the Akedas Yitzchak. Avraham has now separated himself from his servants. He is now with his son Yitzchak alone, and they are heading off to perform. Now at this point, Avraham knows what he's been commanded to do. That was in verse 2. Kachna es bincho es yechidcha, take your son, your only son, the one that you love, and raise him up as an offering to me. Avraham knows that. He has not, as of yet, communicated that to Yitzchak. Yitzchak himself does not know that. Yitzchak just knows that he's clearly going to perform some offering with his father Avraham. They have left the donkey, they've left the servants back there, and they're now walking on their own. So let's study, let's learn the verses inside, and see what we get. Pasuk Vav. Vayikach Avraham es atzei ha'ola vayosem al Yitzchak beno. Avraham, now again, they're still a little journey away from the actual point where they will perform the sacrifice. They're just leaving the lad and the donkey behind. Avraham takes the wood for the offering, places it on Yitzchak, his son, and that doesn't mean to place it on him in the sense of a sacrifice. They still have a journey to go. He just places it on him to carry. And he then took in his hand the fire, the whatever utensil, whatever they had, which he would then create a fire with, and he took the knife, which he would use to slaughter the sacrifice with. So the items that they're taking with are, they have the wood, they have the fire, they have the knife, and they then set out together, the two of them, Avraham and Yitzchak, Vayelchu Shnehem Yachtov, the two of them go together on their way. Now, a brief parenthetical point, the word in Hebrew for knife is an interesting word that's used here in the story. The word used for knife is the word ma'acheles, which is an odd word. Rashi points out that's not the general word. Usually, what word do we use for a knife? A sakin is the word that we would use for a knife. So why is the word ma'acheles used? So Rashi says, well, on the simple meaning, it was a knife, and it means a knife, but it was used to create food, ochel. So it's a ma'acheles, it is the utensil which creates food to be eaten, and that's why it has that name of the ma'acheles. And then Rashi adds another meaning, based on the Medrash, Zos nikreis ma'acheles al shem she Yisrael oichlim maton schara. The Jewish people would eat the rewards of this act. So the Torah hints at the very beginning of the story, as Avraham and Yitzchak set out on their own on this journey, the knife is referred to as a ma'acheles, one which creates something which you eat. It's an odd usage for a knife. We don't call knives food producers. We call them knives. why is this called a food producer? So the sages hinted at, because there is something in this story which the Jewish people are going to reap the benefits for generations and generations to come. It is through this incident that we will reap that benefit. We will eat, so to speak, the reward of Avraham and Yitzchak's sacrifice here, and that's hinted at in that word here of Ma'achalas. But let's leave that alone. What's odd? What's
good question?
Yeah.
It says it's Ola, like Ola offering, right?
Mm-hmm.
Now Ola offering, is that a fully consumed one, or is that one that from?
Generally, that's a fully consumed offering. That's correct. In other words, the word the Torah uses here is the word, the fire for the offering is the fire of an offering that would be burnt completely. Correct.
Because, like, Kohanim obviously don't benefit from the whole offering.
That's right.
So, check us there.
Yeah, I don't know if at this point where we don't have distinctions. I don't know at this point, this is before Sefer Vayikra, where those come in. It might just be a generic term, like the wood of the sacrifice at this point. I'm not sure. A fair point. Okay, but what's odd about this verse, verse 6, is the final phrase about it. Right? Verse 5, which we read, already said that Avram said to his young men that were with him, "You stay here by yourselves, and I and the lad," who's that referring to? Yitzchak, "are going to go and perform the sacrifice and will return." So in verse 6, when it says that Avram took the wood, and he took the fire, and he took the knife, and the two of them went together as extraneous. We already know that. That's what the plan was. The plan was that they were going to leave everybody else behind and go on their own. Why does the Torah stress, "and the two of them went on together"? So the phrase of "Vayelchu Shneihem Yachtov," they went together, almost as one, with achdus, with togetherness, they went together. So Rashi points out, what was the togetherness that they went with? So Rashi says, well, it's an interesting thing, because Avraham, Avraham walked knowing what he was walking towards. He walked along knowing that the knife and the fire and the wood was for his son to be sacrificed. Yitzchak walked along thinking he was taking a journey with his father to go find an animal and sacrifice it to Hashem. But they were walking together. Says Rashi, Avraham, with the same ratzon and simcha, with the same will, the same desire, the same joy, walked together with his son Yitzchak, who had that same joy, because he wasn't in tune with anything. He didn't think anything was up at this point. So he had a ratzon, he had a desire, he had a joy to fulfill the word of Hashem. And Avraham had that same joy, even though Avraham knew that the task that he was about to perform was actually offering up his son as a sacrifice. Now we're going to get back to this phrase, because this phrase repeats itself three times in the story of Vayelchu Yachtov, walking together. And each time, there's a little different variation, a little different nuance as to what's the significance that two people, who one would think would be coming from vastly different perspectives, are still walking together. So this first time that we see it, the different perspectives are Avraham, knowing what he's about to perform, has the same joy and willing desire to do so as his son Yitzchak, who has no idea what's about to hit him. Okay, let's move forward. Pasuk Zayin, verse 7. Vayomer Yitzchak el Avraham aviv. Yitzchak is walking along with his father Avraham. He's holding the wood, he has a knife, we have the fire, and what are we missing? The sacrifice. Says the now pay attention to the way there's a beautiful, beautiful nuance in this, in these next, we're going to read these next two, three psukim together, then we'll go back and work through them. 7. Vayomer Yitzchak el Avraham aviv, and Yitzchak says to his father Avraham, Vayomer avi, and he says, Father. Vayomer, and his father Avraham answers, Hineni bini, here I am, my son. Vayomer, Yitzchak says, Hinei ha'esh v'ha'etzim. Here I see fire, I see wood. V'ayei haseh le'olah. But where is the seh? Where is the offering? Where is the actual lamb that we will put for an offering? Vayomer Avraham, and Avraham his father responds, Elokim yirelo haseh le'olah v'ni. Hashem will seek out for himself the lamb, my son. And the two of them went together. Again that phrase, Vayelchu Shnehem Yachtav. Fascinating dialogue between Avraham and Yitzchak. What's some of the things that strike you as odd in this dialogue?
if it means anything, I noticed that God's name was Elohim.
Okay, which is the name of justice or din.
So why is he expecting a sheep? So?
Okay, some of there was an expectation there'd be a lamb. Fair point. What about the dialogue? What's odd about the dialogue?
I find it odd that he said they're walking together, and yet when Yitzchak calls him, Avram says, "Hineni b'ni," here I am, as though they don't see each other.
Excellent. So take that one step even before that. How does the conversation start? How did this conversation start? Yitzchak says to his father, and he says, "Father." But he doesn't ask. He doesn't say anything else.
Right.
And then, but that's like a full statement, to which Avram responds, "Here I am, my son." To which Yitzchak says, "I see the fire and the wood. Where is the lamb?" How should that conversation have gone?
Father, where is the lamb?
Right. This should have been a much more simple dialogue.
Right.
We're walking together. We're holding all the stuff. When you woke me up this morning, you said, "Come, my son Yitzchak, we're going to bring an offering to Hashem." They gathered the knife. They gathered the wood. They gathered all the stuff. They start walking. They leave everybody behind. They say, "We're going to go serve Hashem. We'll be back in a few minutes." Yitzchak's got a question. "Dad, where's the lamb?" The dialogue is much more complex than that. And the Torah tells us about it. Yitzchak says, "Father." Avram responds, "Yes, my son. I see the wood and the fire. Where's the lamb?" Avram responds, "Hashem will find for himself the lamb, my son." And they walked together. A lot here. Let's start with the second verse, actually. Let's start with Avram's response. "Hashem will choose for himself the lamb," says Rashi. Yir Eloh Haseh, in the first column of Rashi there, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 lines from the bottom. Yir Eloh Haseh, Kilomar Yir Eviyivchar Lo Haseh, Hashem will choose and find for himself a lamb. The im ein se, and if it won't be a lamb, li ola bini. Now, what Rashi is doing here is interjecting a commentary into the phrase of the Torah. The phrase of the Torah is Elokim yire lo haseh li ola bini. Hashem will choose for himself the lamb, comma, my son. Where is the comma? Right before that last word, son, so that it reads Hashem will choose for himself the lamb for the offering, comma, my son. Rashi says, but that's not really what Avram was saying. Avram was saying is Hashem will choose for himself a lamb, comma, but if we can't, then for an offering, you, my son. Changing where that comma would go, as the Medrash is reading it to Avraham's words, li ola bini, you will be the ola, my son, if there is no lamb waiting for us, as if to say, what he's really saying, you're going to be it. You will be that seh. How does the Torah then conclude? What's the next phrase after Avram basically lays down that hint, that strong saying of, it's going to be you? What does the Torah then say? Vayelchu shnehem yachdav. And again, the two of them walk together alone. Says Rashi, va'afal pi shehevin Yitzchak shehu holech lehi shochet. Even though now Yitzchak also understood that he was going to be the one offered as a sacrifice, vayelchu shnehem yachdav, they still walked along together, belev shota, with a united or similar type of heart. So that they first, vayelchu shnehem yachdav, they walked together, referring to Avram and to Yitzchak. Avraham, knowing the task that he was about to perform, walking together with Yitzchak with the same joy, the same desire, as Yitzchak, who's oblivious to that. As the dialogue goes along, as they're walking towards their destination, and it becomes clear to Yitzchak what's going on, again the Torah says they walked together walked along together. Now, the two of them knowing what's going on, Yitzchak from his perspective, his life's about to end. Avraham from the perspective, he's about to end his own son's life. And together, Belev Sholem, Belev Shavu, with a similar heart, together they walk along towards their destination. Now again, the meaning of that, I just have to mention this, the idea of why was this task chosen, and the meaning behind it was, we discussed that a year or so ago, I'm sure it was like, oh, like, who remembers what we discussed back then, but just we'll leave that aside for now, maybe we'll get back to that at the end, as far as, but just work through the psukim that we're up to now. I just want to at least acknowledge that that's the elephant in the room as to, like, why was Avram being asked to do this? Maybe, but let's leave that aside for right now. I want to share with you a beautiful comment from the Kli Yakar. The Kli Yakar is one of the classic commentaries on the Chumash. It's printed in your standard edition. Who's bothered by the beginning of this dialogue, which we pointed out. Yitzchak should have opened up and said, "Hey, Dad, where's the lamb? I see everything here. What's going on?" And instead we have this almost dramatic reading of Yitzchak saying, "Father," and his father responding, "Here I am, my son." And then he again says, "Where is everything?" And the father says, "If we don't have one, it's really going to be used," in essence, his response. The Kli Yakar comments, I'm sorry, I just wanted to read some of his words inside because they were here. Why does Yitzchak only open with the words "father"? How come he didn't ask his question right away? Why does he just start by declaring "father"? Says the Kli Yakar, Yitzchak was margish. He sensed that his father was planning on offering him up as a sacrifice. Yitzchak's no dummy. He's a 37-year-old man. He knows he's on his way up a mountainside. He's got wood. He's got fire. He's got a knife, and no animal in sight. He's aware something's going on over here. But he's not sure what's happening to his father. He's not really sure what the plan is. He doesn't know, says the Kli Yakar, whether or not his father has somehow, something's going on, he's changed, or whether or not this has been some command from Hashem, because remember, Yitzchak does not receive this from Hashem. This is Avraham's test. Very often it is discussed, whose test, who's given the credit for the test of the Akedah? It's Avram's test. It's not described as Yitzchak's test, because from Yitzchak's perspective, he receives the word from a Navi, from a prophet, someone who's been declared, determined to be a prophet, who said, this is what Hashem wants. Okay, I may not be happy with it, but that's what Hashem wants. Avram is the one who actually receives this and has to determine that this is really what Hashem wants and carry it out. But Yitzchak never receives this as a prophecy. Yitzchak's not really sure what's going on. Says the Kli Yakar, "Al kein karu avi l'nasoso im ya'anenu." So he calls him to see, will he answer? When I call him, simply, "Father." How does a father respond on his way to sacrifice his son? Yitzchak's beginning to get the sense that's what's going on. But he doesn't get the sense as to why, where is this coming from, and what's going on. So how does a son respond when his father's about to do that? He says to him, "Father, nothing else. I have nothing more to say to you. Just Father." Calling and appealing to that fatherly sense of, "I'm your son. I'm the one you waited for 100 years. Father." Now, what response is he looking for? If something's going on with Avram, then he'll already have in his mind sort of cut him off as a father-son relationship. I can't carry this out as a loving father in the moment of being a loving father. It's just an impossible action. So what do we do as human beings when we are forced to do something that we can't reconcile with our emotions? We cut that off. We distance ourselves from it. Right? This is what the Germans, Yimach Shemam, had to do. How did they get a people to kill and annihilate innocent men, women, and children? They dehumanized them. Because as long as we will remain human, it's just, you can't. How can somebody do that? So that's what needed to be done. So Yitzchak is testing, he's probing, and he says, "Father." Kibos Erotzaleda me, and he wants to know, where is his father's mindset? Vikasher Onola, what does his father answer? Hineni Bini. Here I am, my son. Avram only simply responds and says, yes, my son, here I am. All of his loving, endearing, endearing sentiments are still with him. He still views him as his son. Now Yitzchak asks, I don't get it. Wait a minute. Okay, I thought you were going to slaughter me. But if you're going to be slaughtering me, I don't know what's going on, but you would for sure have cut me off as your father. So I probe and I say, Father! And you say, yes, my son. Now, says the Kli Yakir, Yitzchak was a little bit confused. That means you're still treating me with the loving sense of a father to a son. If that's the case, well, then I see the knife and the fire and the wood. Where is the lamb? It's a question which he only asks now. He had the question at first, but at first he assumed it must have been me. Something's up with Dad. I test this out. Do I got to run for my life? But his father says, no, yes, my son, what would you like? And when he responds in that way, well, then, you're still my father. When I call you that way, just with father, and you respond, yes, my son, well, then, where's the lamb? Then to that, Abraham answers, Hashem will choose for himself the lamb. And as Rashi explained, embedded in those words are the idea, and if he doesn't have a set waiting up there, it's you. Says the Kli Yakir, Lo ani bacharti b'cha. I'm not the one who made this decision. It's not that I lost my mind. It's not like I've become a cruel person to you. Hashem has chosen this. And Hashem has told me that this is what's necessary. Va'ani va'ata shineinu chayovin b'chvodo. Both of us are obligated in his honor. So at this point, when Avram says, you're still my loving son and I'm still your loving father, Hashem is the one who has chosen this. Az yelchu shneihem yachtav. And that's why the Torah then concludes the following phrase, they walk together alone in that unity, because now with that, in this dialogue, says the Kli Yakir, is this idea in which Yitzchak is probing and saying, what's going on? In which Avram says, it's not me, it's not my idea, this is Hashem's idea, this is what he wants. Vayelchu shneihem yachtav. And again, they then walk together to fulfill that. Once Yitzchak has determined, you're still my loving father, but this is a desire from Hashem in order to do this. That's how we understand this beautiful dialogue between Yitzchak and Avram, why Yitzchak first just calls out father, and Avram responds, yes, my son. Okay, continuing on. Pasuk Tes, 9. Vayavo el amakom asher amar lo ha'elokim. So they arrived at the place that Hashem had told Avram to go. Vayiven sham Avram es ha'mizbeach. Avram there constructed the altar. Vayaroich es ha'etzim. And he set the wood. Vayakod es Yitzchak beno. Bound up his son Yitzchak. Vayosem oso al ha'mizbeach mi ma'alo etzim. And placed him on the altar atop of the wood. Now there's a well-known and often quoted Medrash, which we'll just mention here as well. The Medrash asks on the fact that Avram had to bind, it's known as Akedas Yitzchak, the binding of Yitzchak. So the Medrash, Yitzchak was 37 years old at the time. You can't, Avram at 100 years old could not possibly have done this against his will. He could not possibly have forced, he's like a little child that he tied down to an altar. He's a grown man. Avram was already 100. Why did he need to be bound up? If Yitzchak was a willing participant, so then he simply could have just laid down on top of the wood. He clearly was the one who laid down on top of the wood anyway to be bound up, so why did he need to be tied down? So the Medrash responds that Yitzchak was afraid that when he would see the knife in his father's hand, that he would jerk. He would have a reaction in which he would naturally not be able to control himself and stop himself from moving, and it possibly would either hurt his father, or he would get harmed by the knife and disqualified, have a blemish, just like an animal that has a certain blemish would be disqualified for being offered as a sacrifice. He might become disqualified from being used as an offering, and therefore he begged his father to tie him down, to bind his hands and his feet, so that he shouldn't move, he shouldn't jerk, he shouldn't get frightened in the last moment, and either possibly hurt his father or disqualify himself because of an accident which might take place. Okay, moving forward, Yud, Pasuk 10. So now we have the situation where they've been walking together, they've now arrived at the place, Yitzhak has come to the conclusion, as it was hinted at by Avram, that he himself is going to be the sacrifice offered, and he is now bound to the altar with the wood and with the fire. Vayishlach Avraham es yado, and Avraham sends forth his hand, the drama that the Torah describes, the different stages of the process, and Avraham sends forth his hand, vayikach asam ma'achelas, and he takes the knife, lishchotes beno, in order to slaughter his son. And at this moment, as Avraham is there with his son bound upon the altar, with his hands and feet tied, and a knife in his hand about to slaughter his son, the angel of Hashem calls out from Shamayim, Vayomer, Avraham, Avraham, calls out twice, says, Avraham, Avraham, Vayomer, Hineni, and he responds, here I am.
Same word as before, when Yahweh.
Third time, actually. Correct. Now, we didn't start from the very beginning. We started in the middle of the story, but in the first pasuk, if you flip back a page, in pasuk Aleph, in the first verse, Hashem tested Avraham and said to him, Avraham, and he replied, Hineni, here I am. Now, there's one very major difference between the first time that Hashem calls and this time when the angel calls. And what's that?
One time, yes.
Excellent. One time?
This is Avraham.
Right. When Hashem introduces this test, in verse 1, in the very first pasuk, Hashem calls to Avram and says, Avraham. And Hashem, and Avram answers, Hineni, here I am, ready. What do you want from me today? What can I do? Now Avraham's at the end of this journey. He's got his son bound up at the altar. He's got the fire. He's got the wood. He's got the knife in his hand hanging above his son's neck. And the angel calls out and says, Avraham, Avraham, Fayomer, Hineni. Why twice? Why does here the Malach call out to Avraham twice, and the first time at the beginning of the test, he only calls out once? Yeah?
The first time to get his attention, and the second time was to stop him from proceeding.
Okay, so Rashi comments, we'll get that, hold on to that thought. Rashi comments, it's a Lashon Chiba. It's a language of love. When you call to a person twice, it's a language that implies more of a closeness of a relationship, a lashon of closeness, that love that he's calling out twice, Avraham, Avraham. Why would there be a greater language of love now than there was in the beginning?
Because he's willing, he demonstrated.
He just did it. 100%. We'll get back to that idea in a moment as well. That now, after the test, if you remember from a couple of years ago, when the test starts, the language that Hashem uses is Kach no es bincha, please take your son from me. Why does he use a language of no? Rashi points out it's a pleading with him. Please do this for me. Do me a favor of taking your son. Rashi there comments to prove to the nations of the world and to Yishmael that you're the one that I've chosen. How much you love me and you'll listen to anything that I say. So now, post-fact, now that Avraham has actually done it, so the relationship is that much greater, that much stronger, that it's been done, here where the second calling of Avraham was more warranted in that show of that language of chiba, the endearing language, more than in the beginning. The Kliyakir comments, and another suggestion he writes over here, is that, sort of what you were saying, Avraham, in a little different angle, Avraham was so busy. The level of concentration, the level of attention needed to actually carry this out, to take his son, a son that he's all confused about this whole matter, because this is the son that he's been promised to have. This is the son from whom he'll have progeny, he'll have children like the stars and like the sand, and now he's being told to slaughter him, but he's doing it anyway, and he wants to make sure that he gets it right, and Yitzchak himself says, please bind me up so that I don't slip, but I don't kick and I don't jerk or do anything. He's focused, and the Kliyaka says, you needed to call him twice to get his attention. The first one, where Avram was just going about his regular day and Hashem called him, Avram says, yeah. This one, he was focused and he calls him twice in order to be able to get his attention to stop him from doing what he wanted to do.
If you're walking along with a little child and the child is about to step into the street, so you don't just say, Shlaimi, say, Shlaimi, Shlaimi.
Right, 100%. Right, because you need to get his attention fast. You need to make sure that he's able to hear you and recognize that there's, he's got to process fast enough what's going on. Now, food for thought. I don't have a full approach, and not for today. Who is the one who gave the command to slaughter his son?
Hashem.
Who gives the command not to slaughter his son?
An angel.
An angel. Why is it that Hashem himself comes to Avraham to give the command, to give this test of take your son and offer him to me as a slaughter, as an offering? And a Malach Hashem comes, an angel of Hashem comes to stop him.
Good question. It seems to me that this Masa Avos Siman Labanim, that there's going to be times in Jewish history where the only way we can be Jews is to be killed right then at that moment.
Okay.
There are going to be times that in order to survive as a people, we're going to have to slaughter our sons.
Why?
What do you think the Israeli army is?
An army is an army.
You mean we'll be put in position, we'll have to sort of sacrifice major things, sometimes our own families or ourselves, in order to survive. That's true. In other words, in a sense, like, besides the army, you go through all of our history in terms of building, just recent history in Eretz Yisrael, what it took to fight for the land and defend the land, and new settlements always came at a very heavy cost. But how are you tying this into?
So I'm saying it's not God himself who rescinds the decision. In this case, it's an angel who rescinds the decision, but that's temporary.
Well, you're saying a whole. In other words, Shem says to Avram, part of this procedure, in order for you to fulfill your mission, for you and the Jewish people, will be this idea of sacrificing your son. Sometimes there'll be that level sacrifice that's necessary. Mm-hmm. And here, I'm taking it back. But the initial God-given command will always be there. It's a test for all of mankind, for the Jewish people, for all time. Are you ready to sacrifice your son for me? Because sometimes you need to do that. If you're going to move to Eretz Yisrael in the early 40s and 50s and 60s, it means your sons will serve in an army. And are you ready to do that? Are you ready to... I mean, for all of these things, are you ready to do that? So that command, you're saying, is still there. God, put him up as a sacrifice, and he's up there. In this instance, the Malach comes and says, I'm not taking back the big picture. I'm just, in this instance, you've done it already. I don't want anything more out of you. Did you see it? Is that your idea? Is that somewhere you've seen?
No, I just thought of it.
Beautiful. I'm not in a position to judge yes or no. It's a fascinating thought in the sense that, historically speaking, it has certainly been true that we as a Jewish people have regularly been called upon to sacrifice ourselves and our children in the name of Hashem. It has been something that we've been forced to do against our will. And that's an interesting perspective, and maybe that original God-given command is still there in the Malach. I think there are other approaches, but that's a very interesting thought. Yeah?
I was wondering, Midrash would talk about like all the Meisim that happened leading up to the Kesitzak, with the stuff in China, like, you know, hindered.
Right, to stop it from going.
So, and here he has a Malach of Hashem calling out to him, and the stuff that is basically not a Malach.
Right.
We'll beat him, listen to that one.
Excellent. That's really where I was going. In other words, when I threw out this question, what's bothering me, and I'm pretty sure I've heard this question from someone else, not my question, how does Avraham know that he has a right to listen to the Malach to upend that which came directly from Hashem? Exactly as the way Josh is phrasing that question of, the sages say that for the 3-day journey that Avram embarked to get to the place that he needed to get to, the Satan was throwing everything at him to try to stop him. And he said, no, this is God's command, you can't stop me, I'm going to do it. And then he gets up there, and then an angel calls out and says, don't do it. How did Avram know this time that this was really what was necessary and before not? We might have an answer to that as we go a little bit further, make sure we're going to get there, but that's all part of this food for thought, the fact that Hashem gives the initial command, the angel is the one who gives the command not to. A, why is that? And B, how did Avram know to listen to it? Excellent. There's food for thought. There's a Ramban who addresses this, but I don't have an understanding of it. Maybe we'll get to it. On the Pasuk of Hamalach Hargoa Losi Mikol Ra, the Ramban addresses this idea of why does when Yaakov gives a bracha to his children, he says it in the sense of Hamalach Hargoa Losi, the angel which will redeem me from all evil. And the Ramban says these are the same, these angels somehow connect. That angel, but I'm not, that's beyond the scope of this discussion right now. But anyway, yeah.
I'm simply going to say when you're talking about that is that in the thicket here we see a substitute.
Right.
So if this is happening somewhat simultaneously, you know, it's the proof is here.
I mean that he could believe the angel because there was a substitute. Okay, so let's go a little bit further. I think we'll adjust a little bit, but you know we'll still leave something for you guys to think about over Shabbos. Okay, we are up to Yud Aleph. We just did Yud Aleph. Yud Aleph was the Malach calls out from heaven. Vayomer Avraham, Avraham Vayomer Hinenu Vayomer Al Tishloch Yad Choel Hanar. Do not send forth your hand against the lad. V'al Tas Lo Meuma, nor do anything to him. Ki ato yodati ki yerei Elokim ato, because now I know that you are a God-fearing man. Velo chosachto es bincho es yechidcho mimeni, since you have not withheld your son, your only one, from me.
Now,
okay, lots going on in this pasuk. Yeah.
Is this the Malach saying this on behalf of HaKadosh Baruch Hu?
Yeah, this would be the continuation of the Malach, the continuation of the angel speaking, and he says, first he has a two-part thing. He says, do not stretch out your hand against him, nor do anything to him. Why twice? Why does he say two things? Don't stretch out your hand, and don't do anything. And then he says, for now I know that you are a God-fearing man. Now you know. Until this point, Hashem didn't know that Avram was a God-fearing man. When he jumped into the furnace, that didn't say anything. When he went, this is the 10th test. We've been through 9 already. None of those allowed Hashem to say, I know that you're, now I know you're a God-fearing man. Yeah.
Well, if you go according to the Medrash, it's like maybe he did pass the Shechtim fully, or he did like just barely pierce him. He did do something.
Okay, so Rashi learns not that way. Let's get Rashi says. Let's start with the first part, the double language. Don't send forth your hands and don't do anything. So Rashi says, Amar lo, Avram responded, what? I should come here and not do anything? I made all this trip, this whole journey. I got to this point, and now you're telling me nothing? At least pleads Avraham. At least let me give him a nick. Let me draw some blood. Let me at least fulfill the sacrifice on some level. Says the angel, don't do anything to him. Don't stretch forth your hand. Don't slaughter him. To which Avram responds, I came all the way here. Let me at least fulfill this mitzvah, this obligation. Nothing. Continues the Medrash. Says Avram, I'm all confused. I don't get it. Says Rashi. I'm on the top of the second column, second line. Explain your words, please, says Avram to Hashem. Etmol amartali ki b'Yitzchak yikra l'chazar. First you said to me, through Yitzchak will be called my progeny. Through Yitzchak I will receive all these blessings. Through Yitzchak I will have children numbered like the stars in the heavens and the sands of the earth. It's all going to come through Yitzchak. So you told me that, I'm thinking, great. Yitzchak's going to be the guy. From him I will have this wondrous nation. V'chazarta v'yamarta kachnas bencha. Then you turn around and you say, please take your son, your only son, the son that you love, Yitzchak, that one, take him, v'ha'aleu li li'olam, take him up as a offering. Fine, I don't get it, it's impossible, doesn't make any sense, but that's what you want, that's what I'll do. Achshav, now I finally get here. Ato oimer li, al tishloch yadchol na'ar. Now, don't send my hand for it. I'm all confused, says Avraham. Yitzchak's going to be the one, and then you tell me he's not the one, and then I get up there and I tell me not to do it. Amar lo Kodesh Baruch Hu, says Hashem, lo yachalil brisi, I'm not going to violate ever my covenant, and the words that come from my mouth I will not change. I'm not changing my mind, says Hashem. Kesho amarti l'cho kach, when I said to you, take your son, moitzei svasai lo eshan, I'm not changing my words, that which comes out of my mouth, Hashem doesn't have a mouth, obviously. That which comes out is not being changed. Lo yamarti loch shachtehu. I didn't say, take your son and slaughter him. Ella ha'alehu, I said, raise him up as an offering. Asakte, achte, you raised him up, now please take him back down. So Hashem says, as Rashi quotes here in this pasuk, the language in the beginning, kachnas bincha, v'ha'alehu sham li olah, bring him up there as an offering. Says Hashem, those words you did, and those words you fulfilled, you brought him up. Now, I didn't say slaughter him as an offering. I didn't say to Shatli, bring it. You did, therefore take him back down. And yes, it will be correct that he will be the one through whom all those blessings will be, in fact, fulfilled as you always felt. Now, part of the test, and I mentioned briefly, we didn't really discuss what the test was. Part of the test was the impossibility of the prophecy. That it is impossible that the son to whom you have promised me will be the father of this nation, you can turn around and say, "V'ha'aleihu sham li'olah," to offer him as a sacrifice. It's impossible. It can't be. So part of the test was accepting the prophecy when in our own human capacity, that which you're asking me to do is impossible. That's part of the test. Yeah.
Maybe thought, you know, since Hashem could do anything, he could have another kid afterwards.
But he promised him through Yitzchak. That would seem wrong. The other difficulty of the test was the fact that now what he's being asked to do, which seems impossible, goes against every single thing that Avram had ever stood for and taught his entire life. Here he is teaching the world about monotheism, about kindness, about getting away from cruelty, and now he's going to be the one to offer up his son as a sacrifice and be a laughingstock. Everything that he stood for is out the window.
Did Avram know how to make tears of mason?
I don't know. No reason to assume he did. Bring back the dead. No reason to assume that he did. So here he has this test to put this forth, and he says, I'm all confused, and Hashem explains, no, this was all a test. The words that I said have been fulfilled. I have not changed anything, and you have successfully navigated this part of it.
Oh, building on what you said, I'm sorry.
I feel really alive.
Building on what he said about transformation, you just gave a demonstration. Maybe that's why he has to call Avram twice, because when you put somebody through a shock like that, you know, their soul could just expire. You know? He's ready to slaughter his son, then you call out to him. I mean, it's too much. That's a medrash about Sarah, that it was too much, you know? Too many shocks to the system. So maybe that's why they had to call Abraham's name twice.
Yitzchak is not, he doesn't react at all. Not before and not.
Right, we see almost no reaction, except from the Medrash, which again is a Medrash, which says, that's why, you know, like, let's think about all of Yitzchak's parts in the story. Yitzchak's parts are, according to the Medrash, when Avraham binds him to the altar. So the Medrash, as we mentioned a few moments ago, says that was Yitzchak's request. The Torah just says that Avraham bounds him up. The Medrash says, why do you have to do that? I mean, he clearly is a willing participant, so let him just sit there. So the Medrash, Yitzchak requested that he shouldn't move around, he shouldn't kick, he shouldn't become blemished. The only other speaking part we have from Yitzchak is that one dialogue we had earlier where he says, Father, yes, my son, where's the lamb? Avram responds, Hashem will choose him. And then that's it, silence. We don't hear from Yitzchak again in the story.
We don't. He's very passive.
Now, let's do a little bit more things I want to cover. The end of this verse said, what does the angel call out to Avram? He says, now I know that you fear Hashem. Now? What's changed now from before? So Rashi and the Ramban have two different approaches as to what's the significance of this phrase. What's the Malach saying? Now I know that you are fearful of Hashem. So as far as, I guess, closer to Pshat, simple meaning of the text, I would go with the Ramban. The Ramban says, now I know, and the Ramban expresses here an idea which we've mentioned a little bit earlier, and he says various times as well, Mitchilo haisa yiraso b'koyach. In the beginning, the level of fear necessary to carry out such a test was in the realm of potential. It was contained within you that you had the ability to listen. I know that you could have done it, says Hashem to Avraham. but it wasn't yet done. Lo yotzo lepoel b'maisa hagodah, it wasn't brought out into reality. And the Ramban expresses this idea very often. Many of the Jewish thinkers over the years have expressed this idea that the world we live in is a world of physicality, it's a world of physical existence, and it's a world where potential needs to be transformed into reality. It's never enough that, I could be a great architect, I could build a fantastic structure. If you haven't done it, if you didn't build it, the fact that you can do it has very little significance in this world. And so it is with our own human capacities, potential, strengths, talents, abilities. Being an artist is really meaningless in this world if you haven't put it onto canvas and created a work of art. That's beautiful. The fact that I could do it, I just don't have the time to spend doing it. All right, that's really nice. But it's all about taking that potential and bringing it out into the world. Says the Ramban, and that's what the Malach says to Avram, now I know that you fear Hashem. Not that I know that you had the ability to fear. Now it's known in action. And your merit is complete because of the fact that you've actually brought that out into existence. And that's the meaning of the now I know. Now I know on a different level. I knew it was before in potential. Now I see it in reality. Rashi, on a Medrash, has another angle on that. He says, now I know, now I have, says Hashem to Avram, now I have what to respond to the Satan and to the nations of the world who ask and wonder, Mahi chibosi etlecha. Beautiful phrase. Why does God love Avram so much? Which is one of the great questions of this story as we go through this, the whole episode of Avram. There's no phrase, the Ramban actually asks this question himself in the beginning of Parshas Lech Lecha. Our introduction to Avraham is the command of leave your father's home and your birthplace and go to the land that I will show you. We don't have a pasuk like we do by Noach. Noach ish tzaddik. Noach was a righteous man. Es Elokim hisalech Noach. He walked with Hashem. Great, I know who he is, I know his place, I know why Hashem chose him, build for me a teva. We don't have that verse of description by Avram. Avram was a righteous person. It happens much later, but we're introduced to him already as being given all of these tests and already having been chosen. And Rashi comments, at this point, Atot Yadati, now I know you fear me, now I have a response. Now I have the answer for the Satan and for the nations who want, like, what's with it? Why did Hashem love Avram so much? Now I'll have what to point and to say, this is why. Look at what he's willing to do for me. Let's go on. 13. Vayisa Avram es Einov. So Avram is now, yeah.
And also it's the credit bank. Because
meaning?
Because Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. So now we can make the deposit in the credit bank for the Jewish people forever.
Certainly, correct, yes.
Is there some place where it's mentioned what the name of the utensil that's used to perform circumcision, what that's called?
Meaning it's called the ma'achel, and what it's called?
A margain. Isn't it a margain? Part of it is a margain.
It would only be called like rabbinic grain. It doesn't have an official name. In other words, there's
I don't know if there's any connection at all and what that's called, what this knife is referred to.
There's no, it's not part of the mitzvah. In other words, you just need use whatever you need to use to remove the foreskin. So whatever we would call it, I don't think would have that, I don't know if it would be tied in, because I don't think it's called anything anywhere. Maybe it is. Maybe in Shmos, when Moshe's wife gives a bris to their son. What was it called there? Especially there, there's a name of something. But it could be anything. So I don't know that we will find something. All right, but here it is. On page 310 and 312. Vatikach tzipora tzor vatichrosas arlos bunah. She took a sharp stone and cut off the foreskin. So it could be anything. It could be a sharp stone. It could be a knife. Okay, verse 13. Let's go for it. Vayisa Avram es Einov vayar vihine ayol achar neechaz basvach vikarnov. Avram looks up. Right now he's got his son on the altar. He's now just heard a message from the angel saying not to touch him, not to do anything to him. He looks up and so, look, there's a ram caught in the thicket by its horns. Vayelech Avram vayikachas ayol vayaaleu li oilo tachas dino. Avram goes and he takes the ram and he offers it as an offering instead of his son. Okay, says Rashi. Vihine ayah, the language of the pasuk. Avram lifts up his eyes, and behold, vihine ayah, there was a ram caught there in the thicket. Says Rashi, basing himself on a Mishnah in Pirkei Avos, Muchan haya lekach misheshes imei bereshis. This ram had been prepared from the 6 days of creation for this moment. And this is based on a Mishnah in Pirkei Avos. A Mishnah in Pirkei Avos lists a number of things which were created on the sixth day right before Shabbos. Specific things which would be used. The rainbow is listed there. The donkey that's going to speak to Bilam is listed there. A bunch of different things which were necessary throughout the Chumash and throughout our history were mentioned at that time by Chazal as having been created that moment. One of the things was the ram of Yitzchak.
So this ram's like 1,000 years old.
Okay, so says the Maral, when you find something like that, in the words of the sages, so they mean something much more significant than the idea that, oh, there must have been a ram that was created and is now 1,500 years old that's been walking around waiting for Avram and Yitzchak, right? Oh, they say the same donkey that Moshe rode into Mitzrayim with is going to be the same donkey that Mashiach is going to... Like, we don't ride donkeys anymore. And how old is this donkey? So there's a much deeper thought that's running through a theme or a concept when you have that. So the Maral picks up on this in another place, in Shmos, when the Jewish people are standing at the foot of Har Sinai and receiving instructions. So the Torah says that Hashem says to Moshe, tell the people not to come onto Har Sinai. Anyone who steps onto the mountain will die until they hear the blast of the shofar. Then they're permitted to walk back onto this mountain, but until that point, it's hands off for everybody, nobody's allowed on. Says Rashi, commenting on that phrase, that when they hear the blast of the shofar, they will be allowed to go back up. Says Rashi, what shofar is that? Ailo shel Yitzchak. This is the shofar blast from the ram's horn of the Akedah of Yitzchak. That's the shofar that's going to be blown at Har Sinai, to demonstrate that it's now okay to go back onto the mountain.
Who blows that horn?
Oh, so says the Maral. So the Ramban asks, the Ramban says, I don't understand, I thought everything was burnt, how could there be a shofar left? The Maral says, what are you talking about? We're not talking about a literal horn. Nobody's thinking that the same. There's an idea here that when the sages say that there's a concept like that the ram was created during the twilight period of the sixth day of creation, and it was destined to be offered as a sacrifice, and that Hashem says, do you think there's a real physical horn that Hashem is blowing? Not a real physical horn. The horn, the sound of the shofar at Har Sinai didn't come from a... This is Hashem blowing it, whatever that means, but it's not that literal sense. There's a significance to it, represent something. And it represents the tachas b'no, the fact that this is what was sacrificed in place of Avraham, of Yitzhak, where Avraham wanted to sacrifice Yitzhak, and this was its temura, this was its, when we switch it, this is what was actually offered. But Yitzhak Kuntner, in his Pachad Yitzhak, he writes an idea that it represents the idea that when Avram wanted and desired to fulfill something, but Hashem told him no, the ayal, this ram, represents the fulfillment of the desire that Avraham had to serve when Hashem told him no, not in this way, it has to be in this way. And that's the strength, that's the idea, the significance behind that ram, is it represents that strength, that desire, the yearning of Avram, the inner desire to be able to do something, to be able to fulfill, to be able to serve in a certain way. And when it wasn't able to be fulfilled in that way, then it should be fulfilled in another way, that it should take the place of this aisle, this ram should represent the fulfillment of the desire to bringing into the world this idea, like the Ramban says, like, I didn't, before it was potential and now it's real. The ram represents the bringing into the world of that idea of I'm willing to sacrifice my son. It's been brought out through the ram that was actually the one that was sacrificed. And that idea is a powerful idea. It was created in the beginning of the world. It translated through that. That's the shofar that Hashem wants to blow at Har Sinai. And there's more to that. But I'm not well-versed enough in that idea to really speak more about it. I want to share one last Rashi before we leave. on the phrase in place of his son, that when Avraham offers this ram in place of his son, the sages, as Rashi quotes, were bothered by that. That phrase isn't necessary. He could have just said, and he offered the ram. Why does he offer the ram, and the Torah then stresses, in place of his son? So Rashi comments, Tachas Beno, Kol Avoda She'asa Mimenu, on every aspect of the service that Avraham fulfilled by offering this ram, he would pray, he would daven, and he would say, Yihi ratzo, may be your will, shetehezu ki'ilu hi asuya bivni. That this should be, it should be your will, that this should be viewed and considered as if I've actually done this to my son. Ki'ilu bini shochot, as he slaughtered it. Yihi ratzo, it should be your will, that this should be considered as if my son was considered slaughtered. Ki'ilu damo zark, as if my son's blood was being sprinkled on the altar. Ki'ilu bini moshot, as if my son, the skin was being taken off, and as if my son was being offered in the incense, and it was being raised in the fire. And then that Avram's intent was for that to happen, which is why the sage is often viewed as a ilo shel Yitzhak. It was a ram of Yitzhak, because it was in his place, and it was in that merit that it was considered as if the sacrifice was made. And the sages view Yitzhak as if he had the status of the sacrifice. From this point on, he was considered as if he was designated as a sacrifice in all of its state of holiness. That's why he never left Eretz Yisrael. He can never leave, because there's a certain level of holiness that Yitzhak had as having been ready to be offered as a sacrifice, and that the ram took his place, but that he still had that that status. All right, that's the next little chunk. I guess we still have a little bit more. I don't know if we'll get back to it. Let me just throw it in 1 minute. It'll take one. If you look at the last phrase of this paragraph, in verse 19, Pasuk Yates, after the story, Hashem gives him another blessing, that yes, now through your son, you no matter what you do from here on out, they'll be blessed, like the stars and like the sand of the sea. Vayoshev Avram el Na'arav, and Avraham returned to his young men that were waiting for him. Vayakumu, they stood up. Vayelchu yachdav el Be'er Shava, and they went together to Be'er Shava. Again, at the end of the story, that same phrase, Vayelchu yachdav, they went together. But who is this one referring to now?
Young men.
Right? Avram, Yitzchak, and his young men.
Oh, but it doesn't say Yitzchak, just
as Avram. Okay, no, it doesn't even say that, which is, again, now there are those, this is where some sages say that Yitzchak either was actually offered, or that he never came back down, because the Pasuk just says that Avram returned. Where's Yitzchak? But we'll leave that aside for now. But who's Avram is at least walking with his young men. I mean, that same phrase, just like Avram walked together with Yitzchak on the way there, when Avram knew what was going on, and Yitzchak did not know what was going on. Then it says it again, that Avram and Yitzchak walked together when they both knew what was going on. And then it says, and Avram returned with his young men, using that same phrase, and they walked together. So I saw one at my Rosh Yeshiva's, that's how Rabbi Chaim Yaakov Goldbach writes, this is to show that Avram was not moved in the sense that he came back as if like he just fulfilled the greatest thing ever. He walked back with his young men who knew nothing, who never went, didn't know what happened. They stayed behind with the donkey. And yet when Avraham now made his journey back home to Be'er Sheva, he walked with them as if he was walking with them. Just like he walked with Yitzhak, where he knew what was going on and Yitzhak didn't. He walked with Yitzhak when they both knew what was going on. And now he walked with his young men. Not in that sense of, I am the greatest person who... He walked with his servants. He continued his walk with them unchanged, in that sense of that feeling of haughtiness or of gaiva, that same humility of, this is what Hashem wants from me. I did what Hashem wanted of me. I'm like, I'm not... You don't have to give me any special accolades. Everybody does what Hashem wants of him. So this is what he wanted of me. This is what I did. That sense of still being able to walk together with his servants, where most of us, if we could even imagine having gone through this experience, would certainly not be able to then just walk together with the guys who were hanging out with the donkeys while we did it. And he's like, I can't be with you. I'm just like, too big for that. No, he walked together with those guys on the way back as well. Okay, those are the thoughts from the...
In a sense, he is a servant to Hashem in the same way as the guys are a servant to him.
100%, exactly. That's how we viewed it. And that's how we viewed it. All right, all that, we should all be such servants of Hashem.